Nice. The referee is reaching into their pocket.
What is it going to be, John?
Ooh, it's a red card. That can mean only one thing. It's time for the Get Off My Pitch podcast. My name is Eric Paisley, and with me tonight is...
Slightly salty, John Brennick.
Yes, we're both very salty. John, it's good to see you. Despite everything, it's been a jam-packed interim of soccer on every front. What are we drinking? First of all, let's get the most important part of the podcast out of the way. What are we drinking tonight?
I'm drinking Agent 77 IPA from New Belgium. It's one of their kind of Voodoo Ranger, you know, stuff where they slightly tweak their IPA formula ever so slightly and just put a new cool label on it. So, but it's an IPA because it's bitter, like me.
We didn't plan this, everyone watching at home. I'm drinking a gin and tonic. The gin's for the win. The tonic is bitter.
Oh,
see what I did there?
I see, yes.
Nice. All right, on tonight's podcast, we will be talking about our gut reaction to the Open Cup win and the Houston loss. We'll be talking about our hardest working player for each of the matches, our MVP for each of the matches. That's going to be an interesting one. Some uncomfortable truths that are going to be very familiar, I think, from last week, and who or what needs to get off our pitch. This one's going to be an all-encompassing one, so we're just going to hit the highlights there. And then we'll preview next week's midweek match versus Montreal. And, of course, we'll tell you what we got wrong in the VAR section. All right, John, let's kick off the podcast with our gut check. Let's start with a positive. We had an Open Cup win versus Atlanta. Pre-kickoff, how are you feeling before the kickoff?
Of the Atlanta game?
Yeah, for the Open Cup game.
I was very puzzled by how strong the lineup was. But then again, I also looked at Atlanta's lineup, and it was pretty strong. So it seemed as though both teams were taking it quite seriously, which, I mean, this is the thing. We've been in the MLS for 2 years. We did Open Cup back in USL, but that I don't know that you can even really use that as any sort of basis. So I thought this was very interesting to see the fact that it seemed like both teams actually did want to go out there and win this. And, you know, it was a competitive game. So I expected more subs to start with, though I think both teams did use every single sub. So we saw that across the board. But I did not expect the lineups to actually come out and start the way they did. So that was interesting to me.
Yeah, I mistakenly thought this game, I had forgotten, and this is just my inexperience, I'd forgotten Atlanta's the defending cup champion. So,
because it was 18 years ago or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It feels
and by
like
that, I mean three, but yeah.
Right. And they have a $17 million player and they were starting them. And so I'd forgotten. And, so the first goal, unfortunately, went to Atlanta. In the 13th minute, Alameda scored with a Gutman or Gutman, I think is the way he pronounces his name, assist. What were you feeling when they scored that first goal?
I was definitely a little frustrated because that was a nice run of play. I feel like we should have disrupted that goal personally. I thought we had opportunities, but, you know, it was what it was. But
it was
I started to get a little worried.
It was a pretty goal from a good player. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think the second one was a little... And unfortunately, for some reason, MLS.com doesn't have the actual XG and XGA for this. But I did think the second one was a little bit... It was definitely a way higher difficulty shot, and it was pretty. But I felt like that one had a much less likelihood of going in. That first one was like, yeah, that was... Yeah. They earned that really hard. The other one was just a spectacular turn and shot.
Yeah, and so what we're talking about is the 29th goal, 29th minute goal from Oroyu.
Oroyu?
Assist by Marino. And I feel like that was a defensive break. To me, watching it again and then watching it being there live, it was a defensive breakdown. It seemed like Jack gave up on the play or maybe thought that someone was coming to help from the inside, from his outside position, and it just – things got crossed up. And so we went into halftime down two. We came out much brighter, almost like a different team. And
it really was.
Yeah, and Got to hand it to Ake Loba. He drew a penalty in the 50th minute, and then the giant monkey left the stadium when Hani Mukhtar put in a goal from the penalty spot. What was your reaction to that?
Oh, that felt good. We earned it. And to me, that was As much as, yes, we got the goal back, that was more of a relief to see Hani put that through and trick a goalkeeper. Now, granted, he is not Andre Blake, which we had that opportunity. I know Leal sunk the shot, but whatever. But it felt like, at least for us, that's got to be a relief for Hani to finally score one of those. You know what I mean? So that felt like it was an important turning point in the game, but I'm kind of hoping it boils onto an important turning point for Hani as well.
Yeah, and then we had a controversial offside flag. I don't have the minute mark, but this one really cheesed me because from every viewable angle and from every commenter afterwards, there was no offside. It was not offside. And taking away a goal from Zimmerman, who had been incredibly bright the entire game.
Yeah, that was very disappointing and just it was horrible. That compiled with not too much longer later a non-penalty call on something that even the announcers looked more egregious than the one they did award, stacked up to be a very unfriendly towards the official second half, I would say.
I was in the bougie section for this game, which I've been sharing my experience with you via text that entire night. It was wonderful. I really enjoyed sitting on that side. It was hard for me to see the offside, like why it was offside, like from where I was sitting, my angle of view was very poor.
Oh yeah, because you were on the backside of the whole thing, so you were probably
So I did
shielded.
not see either the offside or the egregious foul. So it was hard for us to tell. It seemed more innocuous from our perspective. Watching it on replay, it was much worse.
Yeah, again, it looked a lot worse than the one they did award, which was bizarre and a horrible thing to have happen when you're refereeing after a completely blown offside call.
And then we have a magic moment, a pure gold goal from CJ Sabong, and then second in stoppage time at past 90th minute with a beautiful assist from Brian Anunga. A really great rewarding effort for his play, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought CJ earned that one. And I mean, honestly, it was still difficult. It was through traffic that he saw and put that header on. So I was really impressed. I didn't quite catch what happened. It was so quick and so kind of chaotic that I had to watch when I watched the replay, I was like, oh, okay, now I actually see what CJ did there. Because
It was a it was it seemed like a very clear buildup from sitting in the stands. It was it was seemed purposeful. Atlanta was definitely on the back foot. They were definitely in like, we just want to get this, like we don't know what to do. So that made it even sweeter. And then of course, the hero of the match, the 93rd minute, Zubac from a beautiful assist, let's not bury the lead, from Hani Mukhtar.
Yes.
The
That
entire stadium went absolutely bananas.
To me, that I'm watching that goal, the part that I was so surprised on the replay is what I watched his face. He was so blatantly calm, skipping the ball, skipping over the goalie, going wide, looking up, seeing where the other defenders were, taking the step back left, and just ice cold, just put in there. Like he looked calm as you could be in that situation. I was like, wow. This guy's got some striker talent. There was no panic. He was like,
No.
okay, I take my time. And I couldn't tell if he looked up, but I mean, no one was coming. I for sure thought, okay, he's going to pass to the top of the box and someone's going to
No
just
one was
blast a
helping him.
shot, and no one was there. So he's like, well, and he did what you need to do in the situation. I was very impressed by that.
Yeah, the
Again, he had some other good plays before and after he played well, but that was just clinical.
He did what I pointed out in a couple of episodes ago. He did what I want to see from every sub that comes on. He made a difference, immediately made a
Yes.
difference. And rewarded and got rewarded. And we'll talk about his play in the next bit here. But I just wanted to comment, and I think I shared with you sort of my it was very emotional because all the people who had stayed, because people left, I'm just gonna be honest, people did leave. But the people who stayed was about there was about 10,000, and I don't know this for a fact, but it was 10,000 of the true fan, like true diehards, like we were there from the USL days. In the energy in the building, even being with just a third full, sounded like a giant. It sounded like Nissan full. It was that stadium has some magic about it, and I was sharing with you like sort of my like sort of maudlin sort of reaction. It was you got very swept up, and it was truly a magic moment. There's something building there, and so hopefully we can recapture it again in our match against Montreal. But unfortunately, we have to gut check our reaction to the Houston match. Now, I wasn't able to, I'll kick it off here. I wasn't able to watch the game live. It was my anniversary, so I was out to dinner and spending some time with the wife. And we had a lovely dinner and a wonderful time. And the Houston match, I didn't get to watch until, I think I texted you, it was already two-thirds way done. And already we were down. And the moment I sat down and they scored again. But before this match, what was your – try to take yourself back. Before the match, what was your feeling before the match started?
So I felt pretty good. I was a little worried about how we would be. When I saw the lineup, I wasn't puzzled. I understood because, I mean, we'll talk about it in the later segments. But, I mean, Hani, you know, asked for himself to be subbed off after 110 minutes. He gave it all, you know, Wednesday night. So I wasn't surprised he didn't start. But I was very surprised overall by the lineups. I wasn't quite sure what we were expecting. But I know – you know, I saw some stuff on Twitter about people were talking about, you know, how we beat Houston last time 3-0 and all this stuff. And I was like, okay, you know, maybe this is a good thing to start. So I was kind of curious to see, because I mean, we'd seen a lot of these players, and obviously the big one was Zubac getting his first real MLS minutes, obviously by starting. So I was kind of curious to see what we get, especially because I never have seen Gary do well. I shouldn't say that. He did it with Cadiz and Sapong sometimes, but hadn't seen this lineup this year with two number nines out there, you know, with Sapong and Zubac. But it didn't turn out quite like I thought it would.
Yeah, so pre-kickoff, I really didn't know how to feel about this match. I had a sense of unease just because we had given – I saw the team after the Atlanta win. They were gassed. Like, they gave everything in that match. So I was worried. I was worried when I saw – but I was happy when I saw the lineup – and seeing Zubac get rewarded for his effort was very pleasing. I thought, okay, great. But then I started thinking, and I don't know if I picked this up from Weeby's column or something. It seems like though you if you do that, you've introduced someone brand new to an attacking side that maybe hasn't gelled together quite yet. I don't know. I don't know what their practices are like. But I just had a little bit of a dis-ease. So in the 16th minute, though, we give up a goal, a good goal. It was a good goal to Carasquilla.
Sure,
Carasquilla. A 16-minute goal. What was your after they scored the goal? I since I didn't see it live, what was your feeling after that?
Again, I didn't see it live either.
Okay,
I watched it later. It was a good looking goal. I mean, like I saw the passes, but it was definitely another frustrating one of like, you know, we could have been defending. We could have done better. We, you know what I mean? So I don't, it was frustrating, but it took some skillful passes. I mean, the back heel that kicked it off was fairly impressive.
It was.
So I don't know that it was, we could have done better. We could have defended it. But I mean, in the time I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't think I was as frustrated as I could have been. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then in the 35th minute, a red card for an egregious hit on Alex
Absolutely
Mule.
Absolutely horrible.
And by a player named Lundqvist, who should be playing hockey, apparently.
Seriously.
The first pass, the real-time look at the foul, it looked bad. The slow-mo look, he didn't even go for the ball, man.
No,
like it was,
and you saw it. It looked like Alex even tried to bail out. It looked like he stopped and said, "Oh crap!" And Alex stopped going for the ball and tried to jump, like spread his legs so the guy could slide under him to get out of the way because he knew it was going to be bad. Like that's what I saw. I saw Alex trying to dodge to minimize it because he realized this is going to hurt.
And so we're looking at over almost an hour of, 11, man advantage.
11 on 10 soccer. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and yet we give up a goal in the 53rd, a penalty.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was some bad stuff. I was looking back on the game overall. First half, we had about like a 0.3 XG. And I'm like, okay, clearly the first half went hot. But then I look at, what do we do at halftime? We subbed on Hani. Later on, Zimmerman and Ake Loba came on. So I'm like, okay, we played 45 minutes without any of our DPs, which in theory are always going to be your best players. Again, we're not going to talk about the Lobo situation. So I'm like, okay, I can see how a team without their, in theory, three best players, you know, might struggle a little bit. But then the fact that we've played 45 minutes with Hani, I know Zimmerman came on like the 60th minute and Naka was like 69 or something. But still, the fact that we played that long and couldn't claw anything back into that was, it was a very condemning statement. You know what I mean? It's, it's funny because I don't, in some ways this game doesn't, it didn't look as bad of a product as the Dallas game where I feel like we were just always a step slower, always a step behind. Like it was just off. We had chances. We had some set pieces. We had some things, but it, we just seemed like we couldn't get anything going, couldn't connect. And honestly, the part to me that was most disturbing is they seemed to have lots of free runs into our area and open breaks. Fafa Pakot was, he was just smoking our whole team, the midfield and the defenders. And hit, like they just outsped us and it was bad.
All right. So let's reward ourselves for having to get through that with a upbeat, hardest working player section. Mm-hmm. Who is the hardest working player in the Open Cup match for you?
Oh, man, I'm going to give it to Hani because he gave 110 minutes of his all. You saw at the end, he said, I got to get off. I'm gassed. You know, I know the announcer was like, oh, is he injured? And he's like, no, you could tell he just got up and walked. Like, he was gassed. He gave it his all. He assisted on the goals. He got the penalty. I mean, he, you could tell he wanted it. He was going for it. Like, that was everything you could ask for the man you want out there to be the fulcrum of your attack to go out and do that. Like, it was perfect.
For me, it was CJ Sapong. I think that he had again, watching it live, he had some of the longest runs, some of the biggest moments were centered on him and was rewarded with the game really falling at his feet. And he scored one of the goals. He scored that goal in the way I love it. Just a random, you know, you just unexpected, you didn't see that coming kind of goal. And that's what I love to see from CJ. And I'm glad that he got rewarded. So for me, CJ was the hardest working player. All right. What about the MVP for the Open Cup? Who was your most valuable player that night?
Obviously I feel like you'd give it to Hadi because again, he was kind of the fulcrum of all things, but I got to give it to Zubac for that show performance because you talked about it. He brought, and again, I think you could make this argument for, I think he was the MVP. I think you could make the argument that we saw the same thing in him that we did in a couple other subs, Hedwalla, McCarty, and when he came on for a little bit, every sub we brought on brought energy. We kept pouring on. I think that's part of the reason it seemed like Atlanta was just so tired is we kept pressing and we came on and those fresh legs went out and did work. Zubac was making runs. He was putting in an effort to truly make a difference. And again, that goal was classy. It took a lot of skill and calmness to get that tiny, tiny window to fit that in. I mean, it was, you know, and he continued to do other things, other hold up play. You know, you and I talked kind of off the podcast about, you know, with Cadiz, the one thing about, you know, he did not score a lot of goals. He had a couple assists, but you could expect him to have great hold up play. Zubac showed some of that great hold up play when we got the ball and he said, okay, I need to take it to the corner and just kind of chill and let the team catch up and keep possession. Like you saw some of that intelligent stuff that we haven't always seen in those situations. After we scored and got the lead, he knew what to do with it. So I was really impressed. And I think that, I mean, he took that on his own and scored it. So I think he deserves the MVP for that because he's the one who really took it home.
Yeah, I'm going to give it to Hani just because he got that monkey off his back with the penalty kick. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a redemption arc there. And it was emotional in the moment. And so I wrote this list right after the match because I wanted to capture sort of my emotional reaction to what I watched. I wanted to give it to Zubac, but honestly, Mukhtar deserved my MVP just because of all the effort he put in, getting the penalty kick and having the beautiful assist on Zubac's goal. On CJ's goal. So to me, Hani Mukhtar is our MVP.
And again, I could have given it to him, but since I gave him the hardest working because he did that as well, I didn't, didn't want to quite double award him, but I think he honestly earned both of those and could have been credited with them both in that game.
All right, well, let's crown a hardest working player for our match against the Houston Swamp Trolls. I'm going to give my hardest working player to Alex Mule's leg. Is the hardest working player, not the rest of him, but just his leg,
for taking
the penalty and getting us a red card. What about you?
I was going to give it to Joe because he unfortunately had a good bit of work to do and had to show up a couple times. And even though he's the one who gave away the penalty, the fact that he had to go out there and do that work shows how things were going. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, he did what the goalie should in that time. And I will say, they replayed it a couple times, and I went back and watched it. It does look like it clipped him, but that was a very, very, very just the tiniest touch if he really did contact him. That was – they sold it well. He went down, and I can see why you'd make that call. But on review, like, Joe didn't really touch him much. But anyway, I got to give it to Joe because he was doing some work in there. And, I mean, it was one of those games.
Yeah, it was one of those games. And this is what makes this section hard, which is our MVP for the Houston match. I'm going to give it to CJ just because I had to pick a forward randomly, and I did. What about you?
Oh, man, that was – I didn't – you said had to as if it was like in the bylaws.
Yeah, it's – yeah, you didn't
forward.
Apparently you didn't read the terms and conditions of this podcast, but go ahead.
I was going to give it to Dax. He did not have the best game. But he was out there cranking. He was the soul of the midfield because, I thought he did a good job out there and it was kind of slim pickings. But he gave his usual performance. Like, I don't think if I looked around and was assigning blame, because it's one of those games of what went wrong, I don't think Dax was the one. He was one of the ones least at fault. You know what I mean? I think he was still doing his job pretty well. So there you go. I'll give it to Dax.
Well, and at least at fault is where we're at for this section. This has been a chunky section, but we got through it. So let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll talk about some uncomfortable truths, which are going to sound very familiar, and who or what needs to get off our bitch. So stay with us. And we are back. All right, John, time for some uncomfortable truths that must be spoken. And I'm going to just kick us off again with picking us up where we left off last time, which is talking about Aki Loba. So here's an uncomfortable truth. Aki Loba needs to go. He doesn't want to be there. It's clear. I chalked up the last two performances to maybe just, I don't know, coldness coming off the bench. It's clear to me he doesn't want to play for our club. I don't know why, but I don't want to ascribe any sort of malice where there is none. I think he just doesn't want to be here. You need to go. And that's just an uncomfortable truth. I want to know when the next transfer window is so I can sort of start counting down the days. Any ideas on that?
Don't make me Google during the podcast, Eric.
Yeah, okay. I'll vamp. This is called vamping.
Yeah.
I'll vamp a little bit. So for the money we're paying, and now we're starting to get national attention to the fact that he's not producing. We can't hide the fact anymore. So what'd you find?
So the primary window closed May 4th. That's the first one. And remember, we have an extended window because we let the Europeans finish their season, blah, blah, blah. The secondary window is from July 7th to August 4th, which I think coincides with kind of the end of that international break we have at the end of June.
That's
so,
right.
There you go. Please proceed.
Yeah. So I'm thinking July 5th.
Mm.
It's been nice knowing you.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, but it's not so easy to offload a player who has not performed here in the promise of because you got a return on sales. There's a whole lot of complexity to that, though I understand it. It was easier with Cadiz because, yes, he was a DP for us, but he was technically on loan. The DP part was his salary qualified him that. Otherwise, he was just a player. He just qualified for that salary. So that was easier because we could say we continue the loan, we decide to buy him out, or we just return him and he goes back. We bought out Ake's contract. That's what that $7 million price tag we've been throwing around is. So now he is a Nashville player, and it is on us to figure out a way to sell him to others if we want to. So that's going to be the
interesting. Good luck, Mike Jacobs. Good luck, Mike Jacobs.
It's one of those, at best, I think you could, you know, probably send him back to Liga MX because he did have some success there. And it's just going to be for cents on the dollar. Hopefully 50 cents on the dollar.
Well, think about it. Like, what Liga MX team is going to want a grumpy bench player from MLS? Like,
oh, well, I mean, that's what he saw here. Again, if you go back to the tape, there was something, because I remember there was something that prompted Mike and others to want to go out and get him. So,
well, I've seen him juggle the ball. I can tell you why they wanted to get him.
I agree, but
he is amazing talent. Matched up. He is an amazing talent. Like, I used to text you every game when back at Nissan. I was like, oh my gosh, you need to watch Ake warm up.
Yeah,
but
back to your point, I think that's the thing, is there just seems to be a strong disconnect between the talent of the player and the product we see on the field. And that's the hard part, is at least from a fan's perspective, is reconciling that, let alone from a front office and what are you going to do with that. And so I agree. I think we've had, I thought I should have done the math ahead of time. We've had about 2 games worth of minutes in the past week, and we have yet to see anything really useful or good or productive. And I agree with you that the Open Cup match, he came out at halftime on fire. He came out looking motivated, earned that penalty, which was great. However, outside of that, there's a lot of lackadaisical, a lot of other stuff. Like, I agree.
He gets dispossessed.
There definitely seems to be some attitude stuff.
I think I could dispossess him of the ball at some point.
And that's the other thing. That's why I specifically mentioned earlier when we were talking about Zubac, his hold of play is good. Cadiz did that as well. He could get the ball, dance around a little bit till someone could come up for him to pass it to. Ake seems to try to do things and just doesn't keep the ball. Like, I don't know what it is. But
I don't understand how that's – I've seen him play keep away with the entire squad and just school them. I don't get it.
I agree. This is the part that I think is hard to understand. Is it something in his head? Is it something with the team? What is it? But I agree. It's at this point – I think we've seen enough. We know the money. Like, if we're going to win, well, if you don't mind, let me transition to my uncomfortable truth.
Please.
We are not Seattle.
No.
What I mean by that is Seattle just won the CCL Cup. You know, Champions League. Awesome. Good for them. Good for MLS. Great win. Now, well, they did that. They were 2-5-1 in the league. 2 wins, 5 losses, 1 tie. We were one of those wins, good or losses for them. Good for us. But it's funny, because if you looked, even in that time, the MLS.com power rankings had them in the top 10. Why? Because we trust them because of their depth. This is a team that starts Rodriguez and Morris. This is a team that last week started Freddy Montero, I believe his first name is, as a striker in their game against, it wasn't the Open Cup against San Jose, it was whatever they last week's game. They started Montero as their striker. Montero is good enough, he could play right now for us in CJ's place. He could be a striker on most teams. Obviously, there's a couple teams that have some great guys. You're not going to put him in place of Chicharito. Duh. Or Carlos.
Or Red Bulls. Yeah.
Right. But you could plug him as a number 9 into most other places, and he's going to fit in and be your number 1 guy, or at least equivalent. Sure. He's their third striker. Yeah. You know what I mean? You look at the depth and the quality of that team. They are stacked. There's a reason they could make the CCL. Now they'll make the transition back because they're out of the Open Cup, so they don't care anymore. They can focus on MLS. And everyone believes they're going to get back to the playoffs. There's the same reason. For that same reason, we're all having doubts and questions about this with the balance of Open Cup and MLS for us, because we don't quite have that. Specifically at striker is a problem. But even at other depths, we talked about, you know, we have Davis. We have Godoy, who's, again, been out for a couple weeks. I'm hoping he comes back this weekend.
We need Godoy, him on Wednesday.
We do. Godoy, McCarty, and Davis. And then we have Anungo. So we have 4 midfielders. That's all we actually have as central midfielders. Everyone else is on the wing. So now that Godoy's out, we've been cycling through the other 3 guys balancing these games. It's been difficult. We, and Gary mentioned this, Ben Wright tweeted, we do have a depth issue. It's not that stacked top to bottom. Balancing an Open Cup and an MLS is probably going to be difficult for us. Now, luckily, our next game is against Louisville, who is a USL team, so we might be able to be a little bit more lenient in the talent we put out there.
Our next match is against Montreal, the top team in the East.
Sorry, I'm talking about the USL game.
Sorry.
So we may be able to cycle some of that and do some balance. But when it comes down to it, this is the difficult time of year. Even without the Open Cup, we were going to have you know, 4 games in 3 weeks. Now right. we've had 5 games. Like, it's exactly. going to be hard. This is the time where you get tested. And our depth is not showing up very well in some of those things. Like, we know our defense is fine. Miller, Romney, Zimmerman, or not Miller, sorry. Mayer, Romney, Zimmerman, we can cycle them at the center backs. Yeah, we have Miller, we have others. But it's like, to me, this just kind of proved that while we are a good team in MLS and we have enough for backups to fill in for injuries and, you know, Zimmerman's international time off and things like that, I don't think we're yet deep enough to actually do these other competitions and MLS. We're not at that level. Yeah. We are not a Seattle. And that's something that we have to reckon with. And I'm curious to see what Gary and the other team, the rest of the team decides of how much do we really care about this Open Cup and how much are we okay with maybe that means we skate in and don't get a home game in the playoffs because of it, because we have to sacrifice some time. I don't know.
Yeah, that's tough. That is really tough. There's an uncomfortable truth about the Open Cup years. Whereas, like, do you, at what point do you go all in? Or it has to be something they debate mm-hmm. constantly internally. I feel like the Open Cup gets short shrift, but I'm not in the position of having to choose which players to play, right? It's easy for me to sit on the sideline and say, oh, just blah, 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 play. But, you know, there's obviously human beings involved here. And the MLS, particularly our MLS schedule the next 2-3 weeks is going to be brutal because it's not just Montreal. We have Colorado coming. Like, we have some, like,
next Saturday.
We have some real competition coming down, and like they are looking to make, they're looking for points just like mm-hmm. we are.
Yep.
And I got to tell you, Atlanta and Colorado have more attacking power than we do. Another uncomfortable truth.
Well, and I was going to say, to me, that's my second uncomfortable truth is we talked about before where the goal is going to come from. Cause we, even if we did what you said, even if we have a plan to get rid of Ake, well, who are we going to bring in next? Cause we are short on goals. And as you said, Hines scored the penalty. Maybe he gets off the schneid. But we are still like, that was my thing about watching the Houston game that bugged me. Everything we did was trying to go through crosses and dump the ball in. I feel like last year, that time in July and August when we were clicking, there was open plays in transition. CJ and Ahani made breaks and we went for stuff. There was stuff down the middle. I feel like everything in these games, we've fallen back to the idea of punt it down the sides, cross it in, let's see what happens. You know what I mean? Now, I saw again in Houston game, we did it where we did a different set play to try and mix it up of not just launching it in. We did the one, I think it was to Davis at the top, and he you know, kicked it in to give it a different angle. So we're trying things on set pieces, which is good. But I do feel like our open play seems to kind of fall short. Like, I noticed even in the Atlanta game, our fast breaks, you'll have one guy, Hani or CJ, taking the ball, and he just doesn't get enough support, and so he kind of has to pull back. You have a couple of people who overran, they wait, and then we cycle it back. We do that. Like, we're not making some of the fast breaks we made before. We're not pushing stuff up the middle. Like, we talked about a few games ago, the goal where Hani just went straight down the field. He just went straight down the middle and shot a goal. I haven't seen anything like that. You know what I mean? I feel like we've always been a team built around using crosses, but it's almost become too dependent, too predictable. And I think that might be some of the reason we're having troubles, because we're not getting some of those open play, the chaos in the box or the crossing passes. It's felt a little repetitive, a little predictable.
It is predictable. And it's clear to me, and I mentioned this in our last podcast, it's clear to me that there's a book on Nashville now. Like,
yes.
We're not a surprise to anyone anymore. There's a book on us and good coaches, Greg Van, the Vannies of the world, and you know, mm-hmm. they know how to play us now. They're like, oh, we know what to do against Nashville.
Yeah.
We're not a surprise anymore. I feel like that's what you're trying to get to about from the difference of last year and this year. And
yeah.
I think that the crosses are trying to counter that, because it's harder to, I think the thinking behind it is it's harder to plan for those in crosses than it is for set plays that, you know, build from the back. But we're just not a build from the back team anymore. That's just not, it doesn't seem like that's our
seems like we've done a little bit of balls over the top. I mean, that's what Zubac's goal was. Hani launched one and it was beautiful and right. He got it there. Like, that was great, but they're few and far between. It just seems like sometimes we're creatively kind of out of ideas and we're just like, God, Hani has the ball. I hope he can figure out who to pass it to. And like we talk about, again, my thing is, basketball, off the ball movement is just as important as on the ball. There's, sometimes there's just not enough guys doing things or creating that chaos to screen or create the open ball. Like it's just, yeah, it's an issue we're gonna have to deal with.
Yeah, the off the ball play, I think, starts and ends with our midfielders. And I don't know how to say this, but maybe one of the uncomfortable truths is we have to have more from Dax. We have to have more from Godoy. That when Godoy is on, our team is just unstoppable. When Dax, and I hate to say it, but I think just Dax has lost a step. I mean, the passion is there, the fire is there, but I've seen him get beat off the ball more so this year maybe than last year. And I saw it in the Houston match, and maybe it was just me being super salty and just kind of being grouchy about it and being upset that we gave up the goal and that we were not, we were up 10, we were up a man and we still only had two shots on goal. Maybe that all combined with my anger and compounded it. But that's my feeling. And that's just, it is what it is. All right. Yeah, let's just gomp this. Let's just get this gomp out of the way because this one's, I got one teed up here.
All right.
All right. My get off the pitch red card goes to the Open Cup refereeing staff of Elton Garcia, assistant referee Justin Howard, assistant referee Tiffany Turpin, and fourth official Wes Kuliet. All four of you, because I'm putting them all together, even though Tiffany really actually didn't really do anything wrong. All four of you can get off my pitch because I don't know what USL level nonsense B squad you were pulled in off of, but that refereeing was consistently bad all night long. I along with my fellow bougie, high
Fancy
dollar,
Brewskies,
$50
yeah.
ticket holders, with the open bar and free burgers were just salty the whole night. It was terrible, John.
And I will say this. So first of all, my get off the pitch is going to be the same thing because that refereeing was absolutely shambolic. It was bad. I mean, it's so bad. People on Twitter calling for jobs, and I don't think they were wrong. Like, it was horrible. And to me, the most egregious part, and the part that kills me, is watching the Houston games. I saw comments of people, they were tired legs. We had to sub you up. Do you know, if you don't play 120 minutes and only play 90 minutes, you're not as tired. Do you know how you don't have to play 90 minutes? You win the game in regular time. Well, you can do that when goals aren't taken away, when you actually get penalties you deserve. Things like that. So I also blame our loss on those officials as well. That might be a stretch, but I'm going to do it anyway because I blame them for our loss to Houston. So that's why they can get off the pitch.
Really?
Yeah, we're going there.
Wow, you're just going to extend it. You're going to extend
Yes,
that
I
get off my
am.
pitch.
Yes, I am.
You
But
know
there you go.
what?
I think it's the first time that this has been a unanimous. Like, there was no other candidates. It was just mind-blowingly bad.
Yeah, I cannot express to you how angry I was at a referee. I've never been that angry at a referee in my life. And I've watched a lot of sports in almost 50 years. And
And the
I
fact
have
that I
never
saw
been
tweets
so
from
angry.
MLS people like Matt Doyle going, like, what the heck am I looking at here? Like, I mean, I think Alexi Lalas got on in like 5 minutes. He was like, I'm confused. He tried to kind of downplay it, but I'm like, no, really, bro, no one understands what the hell just happened.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know what? Let's put this behind us. Let's put this behind us. Let's take a moment of zen. We'll take a deep breath. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the freight train that is Montreal that is coming to Geodis Park on Wednesday. And then we'll talk about what we got wrong and then wrap up the show. So stick with us. And we are back. All right, John, we've got some matches coming up. So who are we playing and where are we playing?
Well, luckily both of these wonderful matches are going to be at home here at Geodis Park.
No, nice.
So first we'll play Montreal on Wednesday, which It's going to be interesting, the emotional return of one Alistair Johnson, the favorite son of Nashville, who departed us, possibly to a surprise of very many people. And then Saturday we get our rematch with Atlanta, nigh upon what, 8 days, ten days. Math is hard, bro. What? Stop making me do this.
You
crap.
Have a math degree from Vanderbilt. Is that correct? Just for the record,
ten short days after whooping up on them in the Open Cup. Nice. So we got a doozy of a doubleheader.
Yeah, and Montreal is for real. Like, they're for real. I've watched their matches. They're not a joke. They are a for real good team. They have got something going up there, and they have earned their spot at the top of the East. And in an Eastern Conference that is not great, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I mean, the Eastern Conference is not great, but they're on the top of it, and they're doing really well.
But I tell you, the more impressive fact is, you know that they lost their first three games,
really,
by a combined score of 8-2. And have come back since then. And then the fourth game they tied versus Atlanta. Then they've been unbeaten. Yes, because they tied. They've been unbeaten since then. So that's the impressive part. They had some good kind of instability at first, the first three games. Then they've hit the ground running and just been stomping people. So Montreal has been on fire.
Let's bracket these two together, because I'm going to throw another stat at you that's not good, which is that Nashville hasn't won consecutive games since October of last year.
Back-to-back.
Okay,
yeah, it's true, because we tied a lot last year.
We have not won back-to-back games in a long time. And we really need to win back-to-back games.
We really do. Yeah.
So that's the challenge.
I mean, everyone
challenge.
Did us a favor, because both LA teams lost this week. But
with the loss in Houston, with the result in Houston, that still puts us in a pretty precarious position to get wins. We got to get some wins. Yeah. We got to get some goals, and we need to get some wins at home.
We do. I mean, this is last year. That was the weird thing about last year, is because we had kind of a longer away stretch later, and so you expect that. But it just seemed. It was something I was going to say in the gut check, but I know we kind of did it different, talked about the games. But I feel like this year has been a roller coaster. We start with the high of Seattle, and we kind of trailed off, had the bad game at Dallas, the unlucky loss at RSL, kind of picked back up. Then we've been up. The results have been a roller coaster, but I feel like the experience, the Dallas team where we got played off the field, then we played amazing at RSL and got just unlocked out of the win. I don't know how to put it.
Fair enough. Fair.
We
fair.
Played the pants off RSL again a couple weeks ago. We, you know, played a bad half against Atlanta, came back and won. And then we got soundly beaten by a team that was down to 10 men for 60 minutes of the game. Like, there's been some inconsistencies, and it's just, it feels wrong, and it's hard to deal with and hard to understand and see, like, how could a team do this to Houston after just decimating RSL, and honestly probably should have deserved three goals in that game easily, you know? So
let's talk score lines here. What are you thinking about the Montreal game?
I kind of hope we keep it close. I'm gonna go with 1-1. I feel like we get a tie, and to me that's gonna be a good result, because I think they are a good team. 1-1.
I'm thinking 2-0. I think that Gary is going to Monday morning at 8 a.m., he is going to chew the ever-living you-know-what out of a certain 11 players. He is going to give
all of them, honestly.
There are going to be some bench players that are going to be trying to sneak out of the room, and they are going to get caught by Steve Guppy by the scruff of their neck, picked up, and brought back into the room so they can get yelled at even more. I think it's going to be a drill sergeant North London beatdown, because To quote, and I'm looking at the quote right here, to quote Wes, I'm sorry, right.
Gary?
No, right. Ben Wright. So I'm reading Ben Wright's quote here. In all of my time covering Nashville soccer from USL Today, I have never seen Gary Smith more angry.
It's funny, because you sent me the link. I didn't get to watch it before this, but I watched the part where Gary's staring, waiting for the press conference to start, and I was like,
yeah,
he looks like he might hurt somebody.
Yeah, he was.
It hadn't even started. He looked like he was ready to beat someone up.
He
which
was
I mean, he probably has a few times as you know.
Yeah, given he was grasping that table so hard. I thought it was going to press into diamond, like the
yeah.
Yeah, so I'm thinking 2-0. I just think it's going to be an ugly win. It's going to come from just panic and sheer fear of looking at the man on the sideline. But I think it's going to be a 2-0 win. That's my prediction.
All right. So which then what are we doing against Atlanta?
Well, that sets up my loss against Atlanta. We're going to lose to Atlanta. Okay. We're going to lose 2. We're going to lose 0-2 against Atlanta.
Okay, so I'm going to go with...
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, so I'm framing that like that because, like you just said, there's this up and downness about our team. And I just can't see us having the type of response, you know, against a Montreal and really just taking out the fear and frustration on them and then just having another letdown game because that seems like what Houston, you know, we had the high of the Wednesday game against Atlanta, the come from behind miracle win, and then the letdown of the Houston game. I feel like that is going to repeat itself.
Got it. So again, my 1-1 analysis is I think we let them score early and we claw back kind of like we've done a few times because it's home. We have the impetus at the end. That's kind of what I'm feeling. And then given that, because this Atlanta game is going to mean something, I think we win 2-1 against Atlanta. Mm. But I think that at least one of the two sides is down to 10 men because after seeing that, after how much it meant, it's going to get chippy. Like I know this Houston game was not so great on the stats either. I mean, what were there like? I think 7 total yellow cards and not including the straight red. So a lot of stuff. Yeah, 7 yellow cards and a red. I think the stats are going to be similar against the Atlanta game. I think it's going to get dirty. Unless, like, we get up 2-0 and kind of cruise and maybe we let them get one back. I expect it to be a very chippy game. So, but I still think we grind it out.
It was getting ugly.
Oh, yeah. I saw the last minute when Hani was about to fight some people.
I was, like, live off the ball chicanery was going on. There was some. Yeah, there was some off-the-ball chicanery. There was some sideline chicanery. There's some bad blood building against us in Atlanta. And you know what? I'm there for it. I don't mind it at all.
Was there also some attendance number fluffing? Because that comes with Atlanta, too.
You
guys only had 15K seats open in the bowl. We had 20K fans there. Come on, guys.
Salty. I like it. Yeah, the I could see that narrative. I always back your play, and I definitely could see that going. Yeah, I could see that happen as well.
But that's the thing, is I feel like you and I have agreed on some things like the must-win of RSL, and we both agree with that. The disparity here, to me, just lends to the roller coaster of a season of, are we going to get a team that smacks Montreal and loses to Atlanta, or grinds one? Like, this is what we've gotten this year, and it's a little bit frustrating.
Yeah. All right. Let's wrap up the podcast with a VAR section. We've gone over a little bit longer than normally, but that's okay. I think we've had to get some things off our chest. What did we get wrong from last week?
Not a lot. I mean, you did that whole San Jose Real Salt Lake thing again, but we mocked you already, so we'll move on to the fact that you and I still forget to plug the fact that we do have a Twitter.
Yes, we do.
@GUMB_POD on the Twitters. We always tweet about the episodes and occasionally some other stuff, like some of the highlights on Wednesday. So you can always catch us at @GUMB_pod on Twitter or, you know, listen to the podcast itself.
Yeah, make sure to like and subscribe.
Thank you.
Hit that like button, subscribe, hit the bell to make sure you're, all that stuff.
All those things.
All right, John. I actually, you know what? I feel better. I do.
Yeah, it was kind of nice to talk about it and to complain of the
I honestly feel better.
It's the Festivus airing of the grievances. Yeah, we all feel better now.
There are some grievances. Thank you, so Seinfeld. We're going to be back. I'm thinking we'll do Sunday. I got another family thing on Saturday, but we will be back next Sunday, and we will see you here then at around 8:00. So, John, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you very much.
It was good, Eric. It was fun. Do it again.